Thank you so much. I'd like to express my deepest gratitude to the many people who helped me get to this point in my life. And you know who you are. In particular, I want to acknowledge the very special efforts of the Reverend Bunny Starr, my pastoral skills teacher, who went to extraordinary lengths to make the course accessible to those here at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. And someday I'll write a book and tell the whole story. But for now, just thank you. Becoming a spiritualist is different for everyone. A few grew up in spiritualist families, but most came to spiritualism from other faith traditions. So how did we get here? What life experiences brought us to spiritualism? You can bet it wasn't a pair of spiritualists standing on your doorstep wanting to discuss the continuity of life with you. And because spiritualists don't proselytize, we respect every spiritual path. And that's how each of us got here. Each person followed their own unique spiritual path, some more direct than others. My own path was far from straightforward. Actually, it more closely resembled hopscotch, a very long hopscotch over the years. So my talk today is going to be about that path, with each zig and zag expanding my and hopefully your understanding of what spiritualism is. The first hop happened at home, before I'd ever heard of spiritualism. Just a few months after moving into my current home, we began to experience some disturbing physical phenomena. Lights flashed on and off. Things flew through the air. There were strange sounds, sudden overwhelming smells that disappeared as quickly as they came. And this is to name only a few. At first, not willing to accept that something unusual was happening, I searched diligently for the cause of each event. But there were more and more phenomena every day. Eventually, there were apparitions of a woman in the hall at night. She wore a dark dress with little white flowers. And months later, when a neighbor showed us a photo of the woman who had owned my house years before and died there, she said, under suspicious circumstances. That's when we saw that the picture and the dress matched the woman in the hallway. Accepting the reality of all this was a great struggle, since I was agnostic and didn't put much stock in such things. But eventually I had to concede that I'd been wrong, and death was not simply the beginning of a long, long sleep. Every discovery generates thousand questions. If we don't just rot in the ground, what happens when we die? How does all this work? My nascent awareness of the spirit world opened a huge door. Suddenly, my idea of what exists expanded exponentially. I could hardly contain my excitement. I couldn't get enough classes and workshops. I attended services in metaphysical churches and read books about phenomena. Eventually, all that searching led me here to the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. So that was the first hop. To get to the next one, would you open your hymnals again to the inside front cover? Looking through the Declaration of Principles, I'd like to point out I didn't start at the first one. This first hop had brought me square into Principle 4 and Principle 5. 4 is about the continuity of life. My own experiences had proven Principle 4 to me beyond the shadow of a doubt. We continue to exist after death, no doubt. And if you look at 5, it's about spirit communication. I've received messages from both in church and in my own home, which convinced me that those on the other side did indeed communicate with us. The next stop was when I went to my first national convention, where it became clear to me that spiritualism, there is no hierarchy. The members throughout the country are the supreme authority. The members of each church send delegates to the national convention to represent them in all decision making. Some delegates are ministers, some are not. All are equal. I found this very refreshing. The trust in your individual integrity and searching. See, our spiritualist traditions are rooted in the philosophy of the early freethinkers who shook off dogma to find the truth for themselves, to their own satisfaction. Many early spiritualists were eminent scientists, like the physicist Sir William Crookes, who began his investigations into spiritualism with the intent of exposing it as nonsense. Crookes was really the first modern-age scientist to step up and admit that there were things present in this world that science could not easily explain. Other early spiritualists include Horace Greeley, the newspaper editor and publisher, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, author of the Sherlock Holmes books. And one thing you may not know is he also wrote The History of Spiritualism, which looks like it would be long and dry, but it is just as good a read as those Sherlock Holmes books. The man was excellent at writing. So, to return quickly to the Declaration of Principles, my next stop took me to Principle 7 and Principle 8, which are favorites of mine. So let me give you the 1-minute explanation of each. Take a look at 7. It means simply that each of us is responsible for our own happiness and spiritual growth, both of which are a direct result of living in harmony with natural law. Each day in our actions and decisions, we co-create our own little personal universe. When we do the right thing, when we act in harmony with God's law, we grow spiritually. And when we really mess up, no one has to punish us for it. We made our own misery. This might be expressed in folk wisdom as, you reap what you sow, or even, you made your bed, not lie in it. Like all the principles, however, this one goes much deeper. It means that you and you alone must bear the consequences of your actions. Spiritualists do not believe that another person can atone for your sins. So unlike Christian religions, we don't accept the doctrine of vicarious atonement, that someone else can save us from the consequences of our actions. You must personally make amends for your own offenses and overcome your own shortcomings. Looking at number 8, we affirm that the doorway to reformation is never closed against any soul, here or hereafter. In short, it's never too late to change. Because we know that our lives continue after death, and so spiritualists believe that each individual continues to grow spiritually in the afterlife, and that's regardless of the kind of life she or he lived on the earth plane. Spiritualists don't believe in heaven and hell, where a soul dwells for all eternity based on its spiritual state at the moment of death. After death, we continue on our spiritual path with the opportunity to progress spiritually for all eternity. I've mentioned natural law several times today, but what is it? Looking into principle two was a big hop. Principle two is all about natural law. Because spiritualists believe in an orderly universe. So natural law is simply the orderly working of the universe and all that's in it. There are many natural laws, such as the law of gravity, a constant, dependable working sequence of events. You can count on it. You step off a cliff, you will fall. No one punished you for being so foolish as to step off a cliff. You did something that was not in harmony with the way the universe works, and the consequences are unavoidable. And it's the same with the work. That's an example of a physical natural law, but there are a lot of spiritual natural laws as well. It ties into the law of cause and effect. For every action, there's a reaction. True in physics and in your own lives. So in a spiritualist sense, and at the simplest level, you can express it as what goes around comes around. And finally, I'll just mention the law of attraction, which says that like tends to attract like. In one sense, it's like saying birds of a feather flock together. But again, there are many layers of meaning beneath the obvious. You attract that which you think about. Your thoughts are very powerful. It took years to be ready for the most difficult hop, looking deeply at principle one, the spiritualist God concept. We believe in infinite intelligence. Having grown up in a more mainstream religion, this took the longest for me to grasp. Because you see, spiritualists don't see God as a being, an all-powerful Father who watches over us, protects us, judges us, rewards us, punishes us. The spiritualist God concept, I think, is harder to grasp because it's more abstract. And of course, there are never any words that can describe the infinite. But I'll take a stab at explaining it. Infinite intelligence is all that is, expressing through all creation. Infinite intelligence is the divine source, omnipotent and omnipresent, that manifests through all creation. In short, we believe in what's called the immanence of spirit. Infinite intelligence is in us and in everything. The explanation I like best came from the Reverend Robert MacDonald many years ago when he said, "We express our belief in this supreme impersonal power, everywhere present, manifesting as life through all forms of organism, called by some God, by others spirit, and by spiritualists infinite intelligence." So to sum it up, in practical terms, spiritualism is one of the most simple and least complicated religions you can imagine. The primary force, the laws of nature governing everything, the continuity of life. No one's asked to believe or accept anything. Instead, spiritualists are encouraged to question everything, to read broadly, to learn as much as you can from as many and as diverse a source as you want, until you come to your own spiritual understanding. We're all spiritual seekers, just like the early freethinkers. When I began seeking, my path seemed at the time a bit random, like hopscotch, jumping from one concept to another until I finally understood them all. It took me, as you heard, years and years. But only then could I see how it all fit together. And it was beautiful. as we programmers would say, elegant. What had seemed like an erratic path instead turned out to be a treasure hunt. And today I feel very rich indeed. God bless you all.